Welcome to Hive Mind. I'm Meg and I'm on Zoom with Eli. Hey, Eli.
Hi, Meg. Happy evening to you.
Happy evening. We're on Zoom because we both had insane weeks. It was the last week of school here and I've been a single mom all week and you had probably dog stuff.
Yeah, I was basically a single mom all week too.
Yeah, so we're doing this via the World Wide Web. Tell me what you've been watching.
Okay, so first, I started Mrs. Davis or Davies?
Davis.
Mrs. Davis. And Meg, I'm having a hard time with it. I made it two episodes and then I kind of had to bail because it was a little too odd for me. And Skylar likes it and he kept going and he got to like episode four and he said, Eli, I think I figured out why you had a hard time with this. He said, I think this show has comic book vibes. And he's like, and that is just never going to resonate with you. And so I'm curious if you would agree with that assessment because you loved this show.
I did love the show. I will say it took me four episodes to get like really into it.
Okay.
I was like mid on it for the first few. Mm-hmm. And it is weird. It's a weird show, but like they really turn up the performances in like the fourth or fifth episode. And that's when it switched for me and I was all in. Comic booky, I don't know. I have a bad taste in my mouth with comic book because I think like Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit cartoony, maybe. Like some of the violence is like kind of hilarious in the way that it's portrayed, like almost like Quentin Tarantino, where it's like so over the top that it's not even violent anymore. It's like coming back around to dark humor, I guess is the way to say it.
Okay.
So I think cartoony is maybe a more accurate way of describing it. I'm interested to see what Skylar thinks when he finishes it.
Okay. He is really into it. And to the point that he kind of told me the same thing you did where he said, I can see why this has not resonated with you, but he said, I think it would be worth you just sticking to it and watching it. But he's like, I'll finish it. And I'll like let you know in the end if I still think that. So I'm waiting for his final conclusions on this.
So after we talked about it last week, I listened to a Vox podcast called Intuit. Mm-hmm. The host interviewed the two showrunners. And last week I had kind of talked about the faith element of it and how it resonated with me as a religious person. And they have a really interesting conversation about how Hollywood shies away from religious content for a number of reasons and how they intentionally hired a writer's room full of what they call believers, people of all kinds of religions. One of them is actually Mormon, which I thought was interesting. They had a Muslim writer and they had some Jewish writers. And I think that really shines through in the show. So I'm having a Rebbe, our friend Rebbe, who runs the Mormons in Media Instagram account, talk about it. And I'd love to have her on the podcast to talk about it when she watches it. Cause I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had there.
Okay. I would love to listen to that. Okay. Well, so jury's out for me, but I think I probably will end up watching it. This was helpful. So,
oh, well, I'm glad I could help.
okay. So Survivor season 44 ended this last week, season finale. Woo. It was a ride. Thumbs way up on season 44. It was, I think, the best season since 40. So it's, you know, it was nice to have like a big winner, especially because 43 was a stinker. It was a pretty satisfying conclusion. Most of Twitter, it was in an uproar that, spoiler alert, Carolyn, whom the entire world was rooting for, made it all the way to the end and then did not get a single vote from the jury, which was just like, the guy who won was deserving and we all liked him as well. But we were like, if Carolyn had at least gotten some love, we would have been like, she did great. We think she should have won, but we can see how others would have, you know, come out the other way. So that was a little bit of a letdown in the end, but just a+ season from beginning to end. I really, really loved it. And the most exciting Survivor news of late is they are finally going next season to do 90-minute episodes instead of hour episodes, because we have been complaining for many years that the episodes are too rushed and we want a little bit more time. And if The Bachelor can be on for 7 hours a week, we can at least have like one 90-minute episode a week of Survivor.
So we're That's so funny it. Because every Bachelor fan's complaint is these episodes are too long, make it an hour. So they should just swap.
They should. Well, my exposure to The Bachelor is like pretty limited, but like my understanding of The Bachelor is there's not a lot of information to track. And the problem with Survivor, and this has gotten increasingly difficult, is there's too much going on. Like the game rules and like the advantages and what information people are doling out and who's lying to whom and who's forming relationships that they're using. And like all of that is like so overwhelming that when you try to cram it into 42 minutes of screen time, especially like on the first half of the season, you feel like a fire hose is like in your mouth. Right. And so we've been like, we need more like breathing time. And one of the things for me is over the years, one of my favorite parts of Survivor is just seeing the people at camp, like dealing with being at camp and like being bored and like kind of being cranky with each other or playful with each other. And the game has gotten like so complicated that they don't have very much time for that, for those kinds of scenes anymore, because they're having to like constantly like show the strategy that's happening. And so it's like, I hope that, I guess, I have a little bit of fear that the producers are going to be like, well, now that it's 90 minutes, we get to add even more complications. I don't want that. I hope that they're like, now we can like have a little bit more breathing room in these episodes and just like show these people being people. So that's my hope.
Well, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. The other two is trucking along. I'm enjoying the season more as we go along. It's a bit of a darker season, would you say?
I haven't watched the most recent episode yet. But I've always felt like it was dark.
I agree. And I think this most recent episode that you're going to watch is the darkest one. And it's like, it veers a lot more into drama, like just unabashed drama. Cause like normally this show is like, there's hints of seriousness and darkness and drama and emotion, but they're peppered with like the funniest jokes you've ever heard. Yeah. And this episode, like, the penultimate scene of the episode, which is pretty long, is there's no humor in it. It's like just raw. And I was like, oh, like what show are we in now? But it's really well acted. I think the show is really smart, but I'm not having as much fun with it.
Sure.
But I'm still like fully invested. And so I guess it's doing its job in that way.
Yeah. Okay.
And then finally, I texted you Hannah Gatsby's new stand-up is out on Netflix. Hannah Gatsby, her last two specials, Nanette, and then I forget what the next one was called, were both really fantastic, life-changing. Nanette especially was very, very heavy, but like you and I have talked about it on this podcast, it was like really impactful. So we saw that she had a new one and I was like, Skylar, let's watch this. And Skylar was like, I know I'm going to like it, but I also am not sure I have like the stamina for like another heavy thing right now.
Yeah.
And so I was like, let's start it and see how it goes. We start it and she comes out on stage and she's like, look, you're tuning into a Hannah Gatsby production. So you're probably worried this is going to be heavy. So I'm just going to like ease the tension up front and tell you right now, I promise you, this is only silly tonight. And she delivers. Like, it's only just like classic stand-up comedy. It's really fun. It's like, it's like a warm blanket being wrapped around you. She's so delightful. I highly recommend it. If you enjoy Hannah Gatsby's humor at all, you will love her new special on Netflix.
Awesome.
So that is what I've been watching. What have you been watching?
Okay, so Steven's out of town. And by the time people hear this, he'll be back. So don't come attack me. So when he is out of town, that is my time to watch garbage. Because, you know, usually we watch things together at the end of the day. And I don't have time to watch garbage. So when he's gone, I'm like, yes, it's garbage time. I watched an entire season of Vanderpump Rules in 2 days. And it is the best time I have ever had. This show is so wonderful and great and hilarious and dramatic. I watched the last season in preparation for the first day of the reunion, which was this week, and it was explosive. Emily and I go into Scandoval on the latest episode of Pop Culture Pop-In. I love this show with my entire heart. I'm so glad it exists.
Should I be embarrassed that I've heard people reference it? I don't know what this is.
Okay, so Lisa Vanderpump was one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and she and her husband own a bunch of restaurants. And she has this restaurant called Sir, which is an acronym for Sexy Unique Restaurant, which is hilarious. And she just hired a bunch of hot people to work there because it's LA and everyone's like an aspiring model or actor or pop star or whatever. And the brilliant people are at Bravo were like, wait a second, this could be a show. And so they just started filming this group of people who worked at Sir, and they've been doing it for the last 10 years, and none of them work at Sir anymore, but they're all still in LA and they're all in relationships and there's marriages and divorce. And this season there was an explosive affair between two of the cast members, and watching that unravel is so compelling. It is unbelievably good television.
Like, do you think I would like it?
I honestly don't know.
Okay, could go either way. Yeah.
Here's what you should do. You should watch the last episode of the most recent season. And if you like that, you should go back to the beginning of the season and watch the rest of it.
Okay, that's an odd recommendation, but I'm
going
to try that.
It is an odd recommendation, but I think it'll give you a taste for what the show is.
Okay.
Also, Selling Sunset season 6 is on Netflix. And
season 6?
Yeah. Where have you been?
In my mind, this show is less than 2 years old.
I mean, it started in 2020, but they've done like multiple seasons a year, and they'll release like two at a time sometimes. So no, it didn't premiere in 23 minus 6, whatever, who cares? 2017. Yeah. It did not. It premiered in 2020, but they've been quick with it. And everyone was worried because the show's villain, Christine, got fired from the brokerage, so she wasn't on this season. But nobody misses her. Like, they have brought in so many new fun women that it's like better without her, and everyone's like, good riddance, Christine. I'm having the time of my life. Can't wait for the kids to go to bed tonight so that I can finish the season. What else? I think that's it. Let's talk about Margaret. You and I both saw Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Tell me what you thought.
Oh, Meg, A+. I loved this movie so much. And I'm going to tell you, I went in with no expectations either way. I knew that you loved it. And you and I obviously don't have 100% crossover on media. So I was just like, I don't know if this is going to be like one of the things that we share or one of the things where I'm like, tell me why you thought this was good, you know? And I didn't know, I was aware that this was a book that is like in the public consciousness, but like maybe embarrassingly, like I knew nothing other than like, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret is a book from sometime that a lot of people are aware of. Like, that was all I knew. And you had told me Rachel McAdams was in this, whom I love. And that was the only other thing I knew about the movie. And so Sky and I went in, and from the moment this movie started until the end, I was glued to it. I think the performances are incredible in this from everyone. There is not a stinker among them. The writing is really good. The film is very well paced. Like, the story is very well paced. And then I'll just say, like, I really am interested to hear your perspective on this, because I don't have personal experience with this. But as I was watching it, the way they talked about the coming of age experience of a, you know, 12-ish year old girl and female puberty and what that looks like and what that feels like and how that is handled by society felt like a very fresh thing to me in a way that, like, I don't know that we see that very often in in media. And as I was watching this, like, I really appreciated that kind of storytelling. And maybe like it was the little feminist in me like coming out, but I was just like, yes, like make stories like this. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear kind of your perspective on that issue.
Yeah, I'm going to give you everything. So I read this book when I was probably 12. And the only thing I really remember was like feeling scandalous that I was reading a book that was talking about like bras and periods. Because I think I was like maybe on the young side and I didn't really have friends yet who talked openly about it. And I was kind of like, oh, this is rebellious. I do not remember her mom being such an important part of the book, but that could be because I was so distracted by the bras and periods. I believe that the writer took some creative liberties, the screenwriter, Kelly Fremond Craig, who worked with Judy Blume on this, in making Rachel McAdams more of a fleshed out character. And I do not remember the religious stuff at all, other than her talking to God, like, because the book is letters essentially to God. Every chapter is a prayer. But I really liked those additions. I thought that it really added some complexity and maturity to the story. Yes, I agree. I think that we need to make more stories about this. I told Ivy we were going to go see this movie and she said, what's it about? And I was like, oh, it's about a girl who's about your age and she's starting puberty. And in Ivy's mind, that meant I was taking her to a second maturation clinic because we did maturation clinic this year. And she was like, okay, she was not looking forward to it. But she loved it, and she loved it because it's like a story. It's her, it's someone her age going through these things, but not told in like an embarrassing slideshow, you know, and not clinical, but more in like a, like, I think the sweetest scene in the movie is when Margaret starts her period and her mom walks in and starts crying. And she says, you're a woman. And she says, I'm a woman. Because I remember being that age and like, I didn't know that periods were like the suckiest thing in the world. Like, to me, all it meant was I was growing up and I was becoming a woman who would have a job and be a mom. And like, it was this real marker of like, this is going to happen for you. You are going to be an adult and you are going to live that life that you dreamed of. It was actually a really exciting thing that I was looking forward to. And I think that's what I really connected with in the story, both the book and the movie. Like, these girls are excited about puberty. They're excited about growing up. And then the realization of like all the complexities of what that means kind of hits them, and it's hard and it's weird and they cry sometimes, but there's still that overall excitement, and that's nothing to be embarrassed about. Right. I feel like we've like shamed girls for wanting to talk about it and wanting to maybe be excited about it. But like, that's amazing. They're growing up. They're going to be smart and capable and wonderful members of society. We should celebrate that.
Yeah. And two points to that in the movie. One is, one of my favorite exchanges in the movie is Rachel McAdams, the mom, goes into Margaret's room, and Margaret is really, really nervous, but she wants to, it, partly because of kind of peer pressure and feeling a little bit of that kind of competition with the girls at school, because they're all talking about like who's going to get their period first, who's growing up first, you know. And she wants to very nervously ask her mom to help her buy a bra. She's like, I want to have a bra. And they have this really, I think, really cute exchange where Rachel McAdams is like, do you need one? Because like Margaret probably doesn't really need one yet. And she's like, so the thing, honey, is like, once you do need one, like, then you have to have them forever. And like, they're not great. And it reminded me of like a lot of things that like you and other of my women friends have like joked about over the years, that like, you get home at the end of the day and you're like, I just want to take my bra off, you know? And it was, but it was like this hopefulness in Margaret that she was just like, no, like, I want to do this. And it kind of led me to like a broader question that I've been thinking about since I saw the movie, which is like, even outside of just like the girl experience, like, It is part of like the human condition. Like we all as children wanted to grow up, and it's almost a cliche as adults to be like, why did I want to grow up so fast? Like being a child is great in so many ways. Like, you know, and that, what is it that compels us, especially like at that age, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, to really just like, I want to reach adulthood. I want to reach maturity. Why do we want that? I remember at 12 daydreaming with my best friend, Sam, who was also 12, about working at the fast food chain down the street from our house the moment we turned 16. And we were just like, we're going to get jobs at Arctic Circle and we're going to work there every day after school. And it's like, as a 39-year-old, like looking at that, I'm like, oh, that sounds terrible, you know, but like, at 12, it was just like that represented like you are grown up, like you are trusted to be in society. And why do we, it's almost like inherent in us. Like, why do we feel so compelled to have that growing up experience as fast as possible? Like, what do you think about that?
I think that when you're a kid, you don't have a lot of control. So many of your decisions are made for you. And what you crave most is autonomy. Like I have a 4-year-old right now who's obsessed with doing everything himself. And it's the absolute worst because he can't do anything himself, but he wants to do everything himself. He wants that autonomy. He wants that independence. He wants a sense of control, which children just largely do not have. So when you look at the guy working at Arctic Circle and his parents are nowhere around and he's making money that he's putting in his own bank account, there is nothing more exciting than that yeah. You will someday be in charge of your own life. Now, what I think the movie does really well is it juxtaposes that sense of like excitement about adulthood with Rachel McAdams, who is in the thick of adulthood and dealing with like real adulthood identity issues and showing the complexity of what it actually means to be a grown-up and a mom and to have that kind of independence and how confusing and hard that can be, coupled with the excitement of Margaret, who wants more than anything to be like her mom is, and how bittersweet that is for both parties.
Yeah. You know, one thing the movie really did well, I think, is the focus is on Margaret's experience, but they allow you to see like the struggle and the pain of all of kind of the main-ish characters. So like you really get to see Rachel McAdams like moving into suburbia, like trying to like figure out her role with this PTA and being a mom and dealing with the fact that she's been ostracized from her parents for marrying a Jewish man and hasn't spoken to them for years. And like you really get her perspective and that pain as she's like helping Margaret deal with these things. You get the pain and perspective of her husband, who is the actor?
Benny Safdie of the Safdie brothers, who did Uncut Gems.
Oh, all right. He's terrific in this too. And you get kind of his pain of like, you know, being the person who's blamed for the fact that that Rachel McAdams, you know, was pulled away from her Christian parents and, you know, trying to also make his way in suburbia, and Kathy Bates as the grandma, like dealing with the fact that like her granddaughter has moved away from the city to be in the suburbs and it's lonely. And she wants to, you know, all of these characters, I think, are given like so much tender care. And they all have flaws, and the movie is not shy about their flaws, but like the movie does such a good job at giving them a really beautiful perspective that like you love them with their flaws and all. Yeah. And that's masterful storytelling. Like when you can develop characters in a way that you're like rooting for them through the flaws that you're clearly seeing, like you have built really, really great characters.
Yeah. And I think that's a credit both to Judy Blume and to Kelly Freeman Craig. I heard an interview with Kelly Freeman Craig on 1A, I believe. And she was just magnificent talking about the care with which she treated these young girls in this movie and this story that is so beloved by so many, and how she made it applicable today. And I have all the admiration in the world for the way she masterfully wrote this screenplay so that it is relevant not only as a movie, because so many times when you adapt a book, it just feels like a book adaptation. And making it relevant for modern age, because I think this is timeless.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you make of the Kathy Bates grandma character? What did you think of that character?
I mean, I loved her. And I think that, you know, along that same thread of you're so excited to become an adult and then you're in the thick of adulthood and then you hit this point where you wish you were in the thick of adulthood again, right? Like you're wanting for things to do. I think that you and I right now are both in the stage of life where it's like, please, I need so much less to do. And then I think that abruptly shifts once you hit a certain age and you're, you know, lonely and wishing that you had the life you had before, just like we wish we were daydreaming about working at Arctic Circle again, right?
Yeah.
What did you think of her?
I mean, first of all, I think Kathy Bates's performance is incredible.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was going to be in this, and she showed up on screen and I was like very happy to see her. And yeah, like I felt exactly what you feel. I was thinking about how we talked about The Crown season, it might have been 4, when the Queen Mother and Margaret the sister are like getting older. And Lindsay Encinas, who we had on that podcast, said it feels like the further and further this show goes on, Margaret and the Queen Mother are just starting to feel really dusty. Like they're just kind of there and they don't really know what their purpose is. And it's like kind of depressing. I think about that a lot, about Lindsay's comment, because that's what the Kathy Bates character seemed like to me in this, is you're watching her and you're just like, she's feeling like she's getting dusty and she's not, she had like this purpose when her granddaughter and her son and her daughter-in-law were living close by. And when they moved away, like you see her like a little bit panic, like, wait a minute. Like, this was my biggest purpose. And now that they're moving away, like, what's going to happen to me? And I, you know, obviously I've never been that age and I haven't had that life experience, but I've thought about like times in my life where I'm entering a new phase and I feel like I'm, you know, I've lost sort of my social network that was supportive of me, or lost like some of the things that were, you know, a big part of my life. And I start to have that little bit of panic where I'm like, wait, what's my purpose now? Like, what am I doing next? And how much that must be magnified when you add age on top of that, where it's like society relegates like people of my age into like the fringes of relevancy. And that must be really, really difficult. And I think the story in like a pretty subtle way was very effective at capturing that feeling.
Yeah, I agree. A couple of the things I wanted to mention. I think the character of Laura Danker was really effective. The more developed, tall one who has all those rumors about her. I think we all went to school with a Laura Danker and we all heard rumors about whoever our proverbial Laura Danker was in our school. And I think that's one of the cruelties of puberty, is that there's no telling when it will affect someone and what it will do to them, and how cruel kids can be during that time. I think that was a really important element to include in this. And I think it was important that Margaret kind of be a part in that rumor spreading and that animosity toward her, and them working through that and her coming to that understanding that like, oh no, this just happened to her quicker. What's happening to all of this, all of us, happened to her quicker, and I need to be careful with what I'm doing.
It's so interesting. I recently saw this like short Twitter thread from somebody I like kind of know. And she said when she was a freshman in college many years ago, she found out to her like utter dismay that she had a reputation in the dorms where she was living for being promiscuous. And she was in an all female dorms. And she was like baffled by this because she, as a freshman in college, had never even kissed anyone. And she was like promiscuous. And she talked to people and she's like, where is this coming from? Why do people have that perspective of me? And she figured out, based on what people had told her, that it was because she had large breasts, like she had big boobs. And she was like, that's it. Like, yeah. I have big boobs. So people are like, therefore she must like have these, you know, this, or, and that I think that captured that exact kind of thing in this film, except it's disturbing because it's a 12-year-old girl. Yeah. And it's like this poor girl who like, she can't help it. She went through puberty faster than everyone else. And they're all projecting their own insecurities onto her. And so she's ostracized for that. And I agree with you. I thought that was like one of the really, I think, you know, toward the end, that girl confronts Margaret about it. And it's really thoughtful and really delicate how it's portrayed. But it like the lesson in it for, I think, a lot of us is like, are we judging people by, you know, how they look and what they're experiencing that they have no control over? And are we making assumptions about people that are not actually based in reality? And for this girl, that had real life implications on her because she was actually ostracized because of this.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention was I thought starting this movie with Margaret at camp with just a bunch of girls was such a smart way to start it because it really showed her being a kid, like still a kid. And I'm going to get emotional. Sorry. There's a girl I went to high school with, and we had an assignment where we wrote an essay about something. I don't remember all what I wrote about. But we all shared our essays in front of the class, and she stood up and she shared this essay as a 18-year-old. I think we were 17, 18 at the time. It was our senior year. And she wrote this essay about looking at a picture of her as, like a 8-year-old, and how her eyes were so fiery as an 8-year-old. And she was in like this filthy outfit, and she had crazy hair, and she didn't have a care in the world. And how she had lost that over the last 10 years, and how she didn't know how to get that back. And I think about that all the time. And when I saw this movie start with the girls at camp, it broke my heart a little bit because I knew what the movie was about. And it's especially pertinent to me right now. I have a kid who just had her last day of elementary school, you know, and I feel like I am sending my heart with her to middle school because that is such a terrifying time and a terrifying time of life. And I have never seen that so well portrayed as it was in this movie. And I just really loved it so much.
This was maybe a natural comparison for me, and I'd be curious to get your perspective on this, but this movie reminded me of Eighth Grade, the film Eighth Grade, in a lot of ways. It touches on a lot of the same themes. You have a very similar kind of main character. Do you think this film was more effective than Eighth Grade at kind of capturing what we've been talking about? Or how would you say this maybe differs or is the same to that story?
I think Eighth Grade feels very modern of a moment because so much of it is her Instagram account and her YouTube account. And I think it's a very specific story about a very specific time, not to say that it won't be relevant to people for generations to come. But this story is any woman at any time. And I know that some of the criticism of this movie has been that it's about any white girl at any time. And I think that's fair criticism. And there are other stories to be told about all kinds of other different girls. But I think in comparison to eighth grade, this feels just a little more universal.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. And especially you talking about Eighth Grade being more about like, what's it like to be that age in this day and age? That does make Margaret feel more universal. I didn't look this up, but I wondered if Bo Burnham got some of the inspiration for Eighth Grade from this book. Because when I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, this kind of like, if you had told me like, oh, Eighth Grade is a loose adaptation of Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, set in 2018 or whatever year that was, like, I would have been like, oh yeah, like that tracks for me, you know?
Oh, interesting.
I had a friend, my friend Corey, who liked Eighth Grade a lot, but her criticism of it was, she said it does feel a little bit like a man telling the story of what it's like to be in eighth grade.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know whether I agree with that or not, because frankly, I don't know that I have enough like insight into that criticism to understand whether it's accurate or not. But going back to what I said at the very beginning of this conversation, the way they dealt with female puberty and the, you know, the experience of a young girl wanting to become an adult, this movie really struck me, like, as we were watching it, like, this feels like a fresher, rawer explanation of that experience than I've ever seen. And I got thinking about eighth grade after, and eighth grade, the reason why I really appreciated that movie was I felt like they talked about insecurity in a really beautiful way, and like the difficulties of trying to navigate society as you're figuring out who you are. And so like, maybe that's where that criticism might actually be accurate, is like, now in Margaret, we're seeing like somebody who went through this exact experience being like, I'm going to talk about these issues that sometimes are a little bit taboo from the perspective of somebody who has lived through them themselves. And so to the extent what I'm saying is accurate, if it even makes sense, I really appreciate that about this movie.
Yeah, it was very clearly written by a woman. There was a woman's touch on every part of it. I do think eighth grade had some shoehorned sexual aspects in it that I don't think are actually true for most eighth graders, or at least weren't for me. And I felt more like Margaret than I did the protagonist in eighth grade. So I think that's accurate.
Interesting. Okay. You think, and I agree with you, that Rachel McAdams won the film.
Oh yeah. But she wins every film.
She is so I don't love every film she's in, but she is good in every film I've seen her in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. She's just a remarkable actress. And it's like, I don't know. She's always going to be the same age to me. She's 44 years old, but in my mind,
she's 44.
Yes. She's 44.
What?
She looks incredible. In my mind, Rachel McAdams is permanently 30. Like she's always 30, and she can play any age, but she's always 30.
I had no idea she was 44. I thought she was my age.
Yeah, she was. Okay, so Mean Girls was 20 years ago, so she was like in her mid-ish 20s when Mean Girls came out. And I mean, she doesn't look like a high school girl in Mean Girls, but I think that's a little bit the point. Like Regina George is supposed to be like, I grew up and I'm like in charge. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the girl who went through puberty first and loved it.
Like, yes.
I'm so excited about having boobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to lord that over the rest of the school. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, she is just incredible. She's so good in this. I cried in a lot of her scenes because she was so good. There's a, like, the climatic scene of the movie, she has a reaction to Margaret leaving where she blames herself for all the actions of everyone else in the room, and that just felt very true to motherhood to me. That felt very similar to a lot of experiences I've had with my own family. My family's not terrible, like the families in this, but where something has happened to my kid and the first thought is, oh, this was me. I did this. And the way she performs that is super effective. I think that she did a really good job of showing a woman in a bit of an identity crisis without being over the top about it.
Yeah.
There's only whispers of it, and we never dwell on it. And I think that is very much due to her performance.
And this is an era where, you know, that we have so many stories about women, you know, mothers during this era feeling really shoehorned into being stay-at-home moms, whether that's something that they actually desire or not, and like really not being fulfilled by it and being like, now my life is I do the PTA thing. I like am making mold jellos in the suburbs and I am like taking antidepressants over it, you know? And like, I don't mean to be flippant about that, but like, there are so many stories about this era and about like that kind of Stepford wifey type of thing. And you see her starting to live that life. And by the end of the movie, she like sort of effectively decides like, okay, I'm going to make this work in my own way. And I'm still going to like hold on to things that bring me joy. And like the PTA thing, I tried it out and it's not working for me. So I'm going to reject that responsibility. Yeah. And like when the movie ends, I like felt very hopeful for Rachel McAdams. I'm like, she's going to be okay. Yeah. Like she's going to navigate the suburbs and she's going to be okay. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recommend this movie?
To everybody, to absolutely yeah. everyone.
Yeah, same. Thanks for talking about it with me.
Yeah. And this is going to be a rewatch for me. Like, I think this is going to be something I just like pop in from time to time.
Yeah. It's a very, like sick day movie.
Yeah. And it goes down easy. It has 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. People are loving it, which is really, really wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were, I mean, I know this podcast is largely for the girlies and the gays, but there were like men in my screening who really seemed to enjoy it. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I think it's great. Highly recommend. We'll be back next week. I think we should go see the Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie.
I'm excited. Is it only in theaters?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we'll talk about it. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.